I recently heard a story about a boy who was fairly new in his faith, and he was excited. He had a friend who was also new in his faith, and he too was excited. They're learning about God and Jesus, and he was really worked up because he was learning that the Bible was actually a message from God. This was the actual word of God, and he says to his friend, "I can't believe it. I've looked in the back of the book. I've looked at the end of the story, and we win." Right? Just like what William was saying earlier with that other story, we win. And the reason that's significant to us especially is because when you know the end of the story, it can change your experience as you live through the middle of the story. When you know what will happen at the end of the story, it changes your experience as you're living through the middle of the story. Quick analogy from the world of sports. Like many of you, I like watching baseball. Go Jays, bit of a tough go recently, but we'll get there. And you know what? They play a lot of baseball. I don't watch all the games. They play basically like every day throughout the summer. They play a lot of games. Each game's like 3 hours. Sometimes it's 3+ hours. I can't watch all the games. I'm not sure who can. But anyway, so I record them. And sometimes in the evening when everything is calming down, I think, this will be relaxing. I'd like to watch the ball game for a couple of hours. But I cheat. Here's my confession. I go onto Sportsnet and I see who won the game. And if they lost, I'm not going to waste 3 hours of my life watching this thing because I know what's going to happen at the end. And I'm like, oh, they won tonight. That's great. And it totally changes your experience of the game. Right? So let's say it's in the eighth inning and they're down by 3 runs. Am I going to be stressed out? Not at all, because I know we are going to make a comeback. Why? Because I've checked the score. Well, I've looked into the back of the book to the end of the story, meaning scripture, and guess what? We win. And when you know the end of the story, it can change your experience as you live through the middle of the story. And this is true not only just for us individually, but for the world globally. And so today is really about two fundamental things. It's about big picture perspective and big picture hope, okay? Big picture perspective and big picture hope, especially for those people who feel like they are struggling to hold on to both. So we're in a teaching series on the book of Daniel, this man of single, solitary devotion to God. And today we finish the text itself. We have a little section right at the end of chapter 11. We're going to go through chapter 12 as well. But our conclusion of the series as a whole is going to happen next week. We're going to bring it all together, all 12 chapters. So the first half of the book, of course, included all those stories that we know and love. This is Daniel in the lion's den. It's the fiery furnace. It's the writing on the wall. And some of us have been a bit surprised by what we have found in the second half of the book of Daniel. These are four big visions about the end of days. These are worldly battles. These are cosmic battles in some cases leading up to the very, very end and the return of Jesus. Well, last week, the archangel Gabriel spoke to Daniel about a series of conflicts and all this violence and pain that would happen in the generations that would follow Daniel himself. And a lot of these kind of come to a head to a degree. In the second century BC, there's this wicked ruler named Antiochus IV who rises up to power, and he has all these abominations in the temple and desecrates, and he persecutes the people of God. But there are people who resist. There are people who remain true and faithful. And in chapter 11, verse 32, we are told that these are the people who know their God. They will stand firm, right? They will know their God. They will stand firm. They will take action. And we kind of use that as a springboard to talking about living through uncertainty in our own day, right? We too can know our God, we can stand firm, we can take action as the hands and feet of Christ, regardless of the difficulties that we are experiencing. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to resume at verse 36. And keep in mind that right as we jump into the text, there's going to be word about a king. And this king is that same one. It's Antiochus IV, the Seleucid leader from the north, okay? So Daniel 11, beginning at verse 36, reading from the ESV. "And the king shall do as he wills. He shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak astonishing things against the God of gods. He shall prosper till the indignation is accomplished. For what is decreed shall be done. He shall pay no attention to the gods of his fathers or to the one beloved by women." Hard to know who he's talking about. Maybe this is the Greek god Dionysus. It's hard to be sure. "He shall not pay attention to any other god, for he shall magnify himself above all. He shall honor the god of fortresses instead of these." Again, hard to know who is referenced here. Maybe some pagan deity who supposedly helps in military campaigns. Hard to be sure. A God whom his fathers did not know, he shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and costly gifts. He shall deal with the strongest fortresses with the help of a foreign god, probably that same entity. Those who acknowledge him, he shall load with honor. He shall make them rulers over many and shall divide the land for a prize. So in short, these verses are really about how highly Antiochus IV thinks about himself, right? He puts himself in a divine place. And actually, this is a coin from this time period of Antiochus IV. He actually had, and this comes through in the inscription, he had a nickname for himself, Epiphanes, which means God manifest, right? He thinks pretty highly of himself. So before moving on, I just want to pause on these verses because I think we are here seeing a warning to leaders throughout history, both then and now, about thinking too highly of themselves. The American president was in the news this past week for posting a picture of himself seemingly as the Messiah, as Jesus. He was leaning over someone, healing them. Now, the president later deleted the picture after a serious backlash, especially from the Christian community, and he explained himself by saying that he thought he was posting a picture of himself as a doctor, healing, not as Jesus. Whatever the case, and I don't know what was in his mind, if that was the case, there is a word for when we put ourselves in the place of God, and that word is a strong word. It's called blasphemy. Blasphemy. My Greek dictionary has this to say about blasphemy. One way in which these words are used in speaking of defaming God was by claiming some sort of equality with God. Any such statement was regarded by the Jews of the biblical times as being harmful and injurious to the nature of God. Now, before we think too highly of ourselves here in this nation, our own government is not innocent. We have passed laws which presume to do things that only God can do, specifically around the taking of life. Only the Lord can mandate when life is taken, and yet we have laws about doing just that, both in the womb, right up to the point of birth in this country, and at the end of life with assisted suicide. We've given it a nice softer name made, but it's still the same thing. Don't get me wrong, I love living here. It's a great country with many freedoms and great beauty, but can we really expect the Lord to bless our nation collectively when we spit in the face of his moral laws? And so Antiochus IV is, I believe, a warning to leaders and governments both then and now. Only God is God, and his law is best, not our own. So having said that, as we head into the final six verses of chapter 11, many scholars think a shift here happens. So up to this point, the details have all happened historically in such a way that they really line up with things that we know that happened throughout history, specifically at this point with Antiochus IV. However, that no longer is the case after that verse. Combine that with the fact that the words that Gabriel uses in verse 40, which he says, at the time of the end, make many scholars think that, okay, a shift happens. All of a sudden, we are no longer talking just about earthly battles, but we are starting to talk about bigger picture battles that are happening in the end of days in the lead up to the return of Jesus. So I'm going to go through these verses, but I will summarize some of what I say at the end because there's a lot of detail here. Verse 40. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, probably a reference at this point to the Antichrist, but the king of the north shall rush upon him like a whirlwind with chariots and horsemen and with many ships, and he shall come into countries and shall overflow and pass through. He shall come into the glorious land, which when you hear glorious land, that's most likely a reference to what we today call the Holy Land. And tens of thousands shall fall, but these shall be delivered out of his hand, Edom and Moab in the main part of the Ammonites. So despite all of this death, some countries are spared, seemingly because of their close proximity to Judah. Now, if all this violence and war and pain seems like it's familiar to you, probably because it sounds like some of the things that Jesus himself says to us in places like Matthew 24. He says, "See that no one leads you astray. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ.' They will lead many astray, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place. But the end is not yet, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of the birth pains." So some of what we're reading in Daniel 11 sounds similar to this. And so the idea is that there will be a rise in violence and sin. Verse 42, he, most likely the Antichrist, shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall become ruler of the treasures of gold and silver and of all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Cushites, today we might say Sudan, shall follow in his train. But news from the east and the north shall alarm him, and he shall go out with great fury to destroy and devote many to destruction. And he shall pitch his palatial tents, meaning royal tents, between the sea, probably a reference to the Mediterranean Sea, and the glorious holy mountain, most likely a reference to the main mountain in Jerusalem. Yet he shall come to his end with none to help him. And so as this battle with the Antichrist comes to an end, some people think, okay, maybe this is the same battle that is spoken about in Revelation 16:16 at Armageddon. Now, Hollywood loves to make movies about the end of the world and Armageddon. And if you search for movies, you'll find, you know, Armageddon, End of Days, The Apocalypse. They come up. They usually get 90% of the details wrong. But there is this kind of interest in some sort of apocalyptic battle at the end of days. And so next we jump into chapter 12. And remember, the archangel Gabriel is still speaking to Daniel. Verse 1, at that time shall arise Michael, the great prince who has charge of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never has been since there was a nation till that time. But at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone whose name shall be found written in the book. So next we have the rise of the archangel Michael. And he's come up a couple times in the book of Daniel, hasn't he? And so he comes up and we're told about a time of trouble for the people of God. Now, elsewhere, when we read about similar type passages, sometimes there's a word that is used, tribulation. This is most likely a reference to the same thing. However, there is good news. Despite the fact that there is going to be suffering, the people will be delivered or rescued. But who is that? Who is going to be delivered and rescued? Well, we're told it's the people whose names are written in the book. So this is, again, most likely a reference to something we also see in the book of Revelation, chapter 20, verse 15, the book of life. And friends, you want your name to be written positively in the book of life. That's the most important thing. This past week, I was in a local high school, and I was just outside the gymnasium, and there's one of those kind of like sports walls of fame, you know, and someone was there with a track and field record, and someone else was athlete of the year for volleyball and basketball. So wonderful. It's an honor to have your name on that wall. Think of a war memorial. The names of those people who have fought and died in the horrors of war, have given their lives for other people, for freedom, for peace. How honorable it is to have your name on a wall like that. Well, those things pale in comparison to having your name in the book of life. Verse 2, and many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the sky above. And those who turn many to righteousness like stars, the stars forever and ever. Okay, here we find it a very important detail. And so some people are sleeping in the dust of the earth. And this is a reference to, it's a euphemism for death. This is a reference to dead people, okay? But then they shall awake. Right, come back to life. So what is going on here? So a bit of background is needed. When we all die, our bodies begin to decay. We know this biologically. Our bodies begin to decay. But if we have trusted in the Lord, our soul goes to be with him in paradise. We know that to be true. However, this is not the end. Sometimes in our modern teaching or our modern thinking about what happens after we die, we've kind of sandwiched things and kind of oversimplified the timeline. This passage today points forward to the resurrection of the dead. Various other people describe it, including Jesus, but all people will be given new bodies one day as they stand before their Maker, including all people who have already passed away. So many of us are familiar with the Apostles' Creed, and we know that line that says, I believe in the resurrection of the body. And usually we think, oh, that's about Jesus. And it is about Jesus, but historically it's not only about Jesus. This is a reference to something that will happen to all of God's people one day. There will be a day when we hear the voice of God, are given new bodies, and all people through all time will stand before their Maker, but not everyone will go to the same place. Those who are found guilty for their sin will then experience shame and everlasting contempt, to use the language of Daniel 12. But those who are in Christ will continue in everlasting life. And this is described in a few various places, including Jesus in John 5, verses 28 and 29. Daniel 12 also says that the people of God will shine like the brightness of the sky above. I just think that's such beautiful poetry. And there's another passage in Matthew 13 where Jesus is talking about final judgment. Jesus. And after describing a similar situation, he says this in chapter 13, verse 43, then, meaning after judgment, the righteous, meaning the people of God, then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. I think Jesus is deliberately echoing in his words what we read in Daniel 12. He references Daniel in other places as well. Just think of that. So beautiful, so amazing. Despite the hardships you experience, despite the pain, despite the helplessness, despite sometimes being tempted to give up, if you are in Christ one day with Daniel, you will shine like the sun in the kingdom of your Father. Glorious and beautiful. The reason I'm highlighting the connections to Jesus is because we can go through passages like this in Daniel that are difficult, and we think, oh, this is some obscure verse in Daniel. It's hard to know. However, these teachings occur time and time again throughout the Bible, including in the mouth of Jesus. So it's important for us to acknowledge that. Continuing, verse 4, but you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Okay, so Daniel's told to shut up the words and seal the book, meaning the vision is closed, you know, roll up the scroll. And this is also the last part of Gabriel's message to him. Verse 5, then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others stood, one on this bank of the stream and one on that bank of the stream. And someone said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the stream, how long shall it be till the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the stream. He raised his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time, and that when the shattering of the power of the holy people comes to an end, all these things would be finished. Okay, so here, this is very curious. Daniel sees some heavenly beings. These are probably angels. And someone asks, how long till the end of these wonders? Makes sense. Okay, this is a lot of dramatic stuff. How long to the end of these wonders? Now, what do they mean by these? Is it a reference to some of the challenges back in the time of Antiochus IV? Is he looking forward to the future? It's hard to be sure. Either way, he's given an answer, a time, times, and half a time. Now, it seems kind of vague and obscure. Now, we've also heard that language before, back in chapter 7. And we said that many scholars think that a time represents a year. So if that's the case, it's a year, 2 years, half years, it's 3.5 years. Verse 8, I heard, but I did not understand. Then I said, oh, my Lord, what shall be the outcome of these things? He said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are shut up and sealed until the time of the end. Many shall purify themselves and make themselves white and be refined, but the wicked shall act wickedly. And none of the wicked shall understand, but those who are wise shall understand. So Daniel wants to know more information. Makes sense. This is some pretty dramatic stuff that he's hearing. He wants to know more information, but he's told he won't. Right? So imagine you're going into this castle, and it's a dark, gloomy hallway, but there's this one door, and it's half open, and there's light coming out, and there's people. You hear laughter and music and feasting. Chances are, because you're going through this dark, gloomy hallway, you're going to want to pause and get more of what's in that room. And I think that's kind of like what Daniel's attitude and posture is here. However, he's told, no, you can't know any more for now. What you do need to know is that the people of God will persevere. They will be purified in the process, and many people who are wicked will continue to act wickedly. Verse 8. I heard, but I did not understand. Then I shall, sorry, verse 11, wrong verse. And from the time of the regular burnt offering is taken away, and the abomination that makes desolate is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he who waits and arrives at the 1,335 days. But go your way to the end, and you shall rest and shall stand in your allotted place at the end of the days. Okay, so at this point, there is some ambiguity. What is this time reference about? So he acknowledges a couple of things. He talks about the burnt offering being taken away, which is a way of saying that proper worship will be taken away. And then he talks about this certain period of time before an abomination is set up. And then there's another period of 45 days, and if people wait these 45 days, they will be blessed. Now, what in the world is happening? There are three major theories, none of which I think is perfectly convincing. The first is that, oh, this is about the abomination that was set up in the temple back in the second century BC with Antiochus IV. Some people say, and I would agree with this position mostly, is that this is surely about what Jesus talked about, because Jesus, in the Gospels, talked about an abomination being set up, and this is a reference to the year 70 when the Romans came in and destroyed the temple. Some other people say, no, this is still yet something in the future. Some abomination will be set up in the future. I don't think the text makes it clear. Regardless, Daniel is told specifically what he is supposed to do. Two things. First, go your way to the end. Daniel, go your way to the end, which is kind of like an old way of saying, keep believing and keep going. Keep believing and keep going. Then the second thing he is told is this, and you shall rest and shall stand in your allotted place at the end of the days. And so this is amazing. Daniel is told, no, he is promised that he will actually be among those people who will have everlasting life. He will be among those people, as Jesus said in Matthew 13, the people who will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Daniel, just keep going and you'll get there. And this brings us to the end of chapter 12. This is the word of the Lord. So I'm going to summarize what we have just learned about the lead up to the end of days, and I won't share all the details. There's a lot of other details that are given throughout the New Testament, but I just want to highlight those that are highlighted or foregrounded in the second half of Daniel 11 and Daniel 12. An antichrist, most likely patterned on Antiochus IV, shall arise, seduce people, and think of himself as divine. Tens of thousands shall die in the glorious land, but some will survive. Nations will fight against him, and there will be a time of trouble, quote-unquote, for the people of God. Those with their names written in the book, most likely a reference to the Book of Life, will be delivered. Everyone who has passed away ever will face that final judgment. Some will go to shame and everlasting contempt, but the wise will go to everlasting life. And so, as I said at the outset, when you know the end of the story, it can change your experience as you live through the middle of the story. Or put in another way, knowing what will happen helps us get through what is happening. When we know what will happen, it helps us. It works backwards and helps us to know and how to get through what is happening. Think of a soldier lying wounded on a field of battle. And I know that some of you can really relate to that metaphor because that's how you sometimes feel. Imagine a soldier lying wounded in a field of battle, right? He is tempted to give up. However, if that same soldier knows that there's a rescue helicopter coming with coordinates specifically for him, that's going to energize him and give him fresh energy, fresh hope, fresh perspective for the challenges that he is currently experiencing. And the same is true with us, not just individually, but what we see globally. And I was recently reminded about the bigness of God, the vastness of God, the sovereignty of God, the beauty of God. As many of you know, there was a NASA space crew, the Artemis II, just completed a 10-day flight going around the moon, traveling over 680,000 miles. At a recent press conference, people were speaking with the four astronauts, and two of them, Reid Wiseman and Victor Glover, were talking to reporters about their profound and religious, even religious experience that they had while being in the cosmos of God. Take a look.
On the ship, I'm not really a religious person, but there was just no other avenue for me to explain anything or to experience anything. So I asked for the chaplain on the Navy ship to just come visit us for a minute. And when that man walked in, I'd never met him before in my life, but I saw the cross on his collar, and I broke down in tears. Like it's very hard to fully grasp what we just went through. And in these short, you just said it's been a week since we've been back, but it's been a week of medical testing, physical testing, doctors, science objectives. We have not had that decompression. We have not had that reflection time. So I'm basing this on what we saw. And when the sun eclipsed behind the moon, I think all four of us, I turned to Victor and I said, I don't think humanity has evolved to the point of being able to comprehend what we are looking at right now, because it was otherworldly and it was amazing.
The only thing I would add is that beautiful thing. First of all, thank you for sharing that. That was a really special moment. I was in the bed right across when the chaplain came in. And the only thing I would add is I am a religious person, but but everything else is the same. It was, there is something in there. And as we start to process, I'll have to tell you next week, but haven't had a chance to really unpack it all yet.
What really struck me about that is Wiseman says he's not really a religious person, but he can only use religious language to describe the vastness of what he has just experienced. So with this bigness in mind, the sense of the greatness and the majesty of the sovereignty of God, here's what we're going to focus on at the end of Daniel 12. Your life isn't just confined to your lifetime, friends. There are big things happening. You are a part of a much bigger story. This is a story with Jesus at the center. It is a story of capital H hope. It is about the big picture renewal and renovation of all things. And you are a part of that story. And I am a part of that story. One of the ways this encourages us is that our life isn't just about the here and now. Maybe things are not as they should be. Maybe you're experiencing injustice. Maybe there is hurt. Maybe there is disappointment. But guess what? Your life isn't just confined to your lifetime. You're a part of a narrative arc that is so much bigger, so much more than your short time on earth. And not only is your life not just confined to your lifetime, your life isn't just defined by your lifetime. There is more. Your injustices, your hurts, your disappointments, they are not what defines you. What defines you is the end game, big picture victory of our great and incredible God. And the message to Daniel then continues to be the message to all of us today. Keep believing and keep going, and you shall rest and stand in your allotted place at the end of the days. We know the end of the story. Knowing the end times actually injects hope into these times. Because we know where everything is headed, we've turned on the ball game. We know what the score is and that the score is good for the people of God, including you. So we can take heart to this and have courage for the living of the days, even though it feels like we're down in the sixth inning. When it all just seems too much, keep believing and keep going, and you shall rest and you shall stand in your allotted place at the end of the days. When you are tempted to lose hope, when you feel like it's just hard to live through these days, keep believing and keep going. The message to Daniel is also the message to us, and you shall rest and you shall stand in your allotted place at the end of the days. When you think that the pain will never end, when you think that all hope is lost, just keep believing and keep going, and you shall find your rest and you shall stand in your allotted place at the end of the days. When you feel like giving up, keep believing and keep going, and you shall rest and you shall stand in your allotted place at the end of the days. The end times inject hope into these times. I quoted Max Lucado a couple of weeks ago, and I think it bears repeating again. Everything will work out in the end. It's not working out. It's not the end. Or in the words of John Calvin, as he reflects on Daniel 12, God at length will not disappoint you. He will console you in all your woes and gather you to his blessed rest. And so, brothers and sisters, we are going to bring this series to a big picture close next week on the book of Daniel. But for today, just remember this. Keep believing and keep going, and you shall rest and shall stand in your allotted place at the end of the days because of the grace of Christ. And all the people of God said, Amen.